Questions or reflections on any of this? Yeah. What are indications that young people are doing this?
Yeah.
Well, they want to. I mean, youth are between childhood and adulthood. They're making that transition. So they have a strong memory of these ways of being that they've been allowed to be into. You know, we're constantly forming them to hurry up. We got to get you to school. We got to get you back. You know, we're trying to hustle them to teach them this way of being. But they do have ways. They like to hang out, even though they feel that it's something wrong with doing that. And they feel bad. You know, you're not supposed to just hang out. You're supposed to be productive. But they still embody that. And when I've done retreats with kids where you allow them this kind of time, they fall into it a lot quicker sometimes than adults do. And they see the value of it a lot more. And they can still see what they're being pressed into and what's wrong with this, why this is not right. So, like, if you do retreats in third world countries, a lot of different developing countries don't have this kind of hyperactivity. And that's one of the things I notice young people comment on a lot is, wow, the sense of time here is really different. And I miss that. And I want to go live in Mexico, you know, or someplace else that's not so pressed. So I still think it's very, this way of being is, and relationships are very important. So I'll give you one example. We did a rite of passage with a group of teenagers. And we were talking about how to be, you know, what adult life looks like. And I was trying to get their definitions of adulthood. And so they were calling up statements. I was writing it on a chalkboard. You know, what does it mean to be an adult? And they were telling me all kinds. Adults get to drink. Adults get, you know, all these different things. Wrote it on a board. And I said, now see, after you've heard all these things, can you come up with one sentence that is a definition of adulthood for you? And Eric Von Doimy, this blonde-haired kid, stood up. And he said, I think I got it. He was the first one done. He said, adults have no friends, adults have no passions, adults are stressed out. So the reverse of that is, what the young people feel like is that they're immersed in friendships, and they see the loneliness of adulthood. And one of the things they're good at is keeping friendships that we lose as we get older. The second thing is, they're good at trying to stay close to their passions. I want to play music, I want to draw. I want to do stuff, you know, and we encourage that in younghood, and they're still in touch with that. And they also notice how stressed and burdened and narrowed our lives have become as adults, and they still feel a wider possibility. So those are the three things they can teach us. I had one church, as we began to work with them, the youth decided instead of running a fall retreat, instead of going on fall retreat themselves, that they would put on a retreat for the adults. And it was a they did a rafting retreat. It was in Oklahoma every fall. And they decided, you know, the adults need this rafting retreat far more than we do. So they brought the adults, but you had to agree to do everything the kids put them in charge of. And they gave adults quiet time with journals. They had to go sit, no talking, have their quiet time. They had to go on the rafts and go down the river, you know, reconnect with nature. They had to come, and youth asked them questions because they realized that what was the suffering in their church, their discernment was that these adults are too cramped, too anxious, too responsible. Yeah.
I think it was really refreshing for me to hear you say that the love side is hard, because
I think this is hard.
Yeah. Because I don't think that we're taught that it's hard. I mean, the things on that side look like they should be easy, and then I think when you try to do them, you can sort of have the impression from others, or maybe this is my own, you know, stuff that I think that others are thinking that I'm being lazy, or like slothful, or if I'm at a meeting where we're planning something and I choose not to volunteer to do something I really don't want to do, you know, and other people are like, well, somebody has to do it. You know, I just wonder, like, what, I don't know if I have a question or if I'm just reflecting, but it was just really helpful for you to say that, because I think it really is hard. It's so much easier to just fall back into the stuff on the anxiety side.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone around you thinks you're doing what you're supposed to be doing and they don't question it. Where I feel like you have to defend how you spend your time a lot more when you try to do the love side.
Well, that's the thing. You're right. It is hard. And part of the gift of in this side is what starts to happen. The more you spend time like this, you start to feel. And as a minister, what begins to happen is you start to carry a lot more grief, because there's a lot of suffering going on in this world that no one is paying attention to. No one's feeling. I mean, how many times, I mean, this, here's a little example. How many times have you seen in a newspaper, on a website, on television, a woman from the Middle East wailing and crying because some bomb went wrong and she lost her kids or lost her family? I mean, we changed the channel. We're bored with this story. We've seen this a million times. Yes, we know there's suffering going on. Yes, this war continues. We're bored with this thing. The more you slow down, the more likely you are to actually stop for a moment and look at the face of that woman and read her words or listen to her cry and allow your heart to break and to grieve. That's our job. Our job is to be carrying grief, right? Take up your cross and follow me. We're supposed to be carrying grief as well as joy. In fact, we can't really carry joy unless we're aware of that kind of grief. And that's partly why there's a resistance to this. And it's partly why you can say to people, this is my role. As a spiritual guide, I'm supposed to pay attention to the Spirit. And Jesus, if you watch Jesus looks like a slacker compared to the hours that most people work in our society, right? Jesus would be fired from most of our churches. I mean, he's always going off to the wilderness to pray. He's going up in the mountains to take time on his own. He's leaving the disciples, sending them ahead to, you know, be by himself. He doesn't write anything on his own. You know, it's kind of like, Jesus, could you just write something by yourself instead of four different versions? But there's that kind of, so we have a model for this as well. Yeah.
Like, I noticed that through, like, the love column, you'll get the anxiety column. Not, like, in the positive part. So, like, through contemplation, you will gain control. Or especially, like, through questions, you'll get the answers. If you're only looking for the answers, then you miss the other parts. So you kind of have to switch it around.
Uh-huh. Well, it's a good point that this is not good and bad.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes control can be really good. You need to know how many kids you brought on the ski retreat, so you bring the same number back. Right? So these things are good, but they are very... There can be good things about professionals and having answers and focusing on problems and or doing things, getting things done quickly. But these feel very different when they're rooted and grounded in love.
I right? feel like you can get the same results that you're looking for if you use the right column.
Yeah, we used to say slower is faster. Mm-hmm. Is another way of saying that. That when you slow down and do these things, you actually come to these things in a much deeper and better, healthy. Because most of us are running ahead of God. God is slow. Think of God as an old woman with a walker. And we're always running ahead of God. You know what I mean? Trying to get things done. And if we slow down and move at the pace of grace or at the pace of God, things get done in a much healthier way, right? We all know that in our families and our relationships. You know, when we're stressed out, we're more likely to yell and do things that are hurtful than when we have a sense of, we have a little room in us, a little patience in us. And it allows us, like you said, to get where we want to go, but in a better way. Yeah.
I came to the seminar because the words, I think, in the promotion for it that I received, even though it did say youth, also talked about suffering and mourning. And I work in an extended care facility, and I've been in chaplaincy for most of the 28 years of my career. And so much of what you're saying, I can see so clearly. I mean, it is so applicable. And as people come to retirement and the end of what they've been told in our society, many of them don't have the resources to be and to function on the other side. And I think that often as I walk the hall and I see the lady with the walker, but there are some who will stop and greet each other, and I see things that I think, this is the reign of God.
Mm-hmm.
And others that I see that I think they never did get over that damage that was done to them in
yes.
their youth.
Right. This is a kind of spiritual formation that, like you said, does damage and it's destructive. And so Jesus is teaching us the way of relationship. And that's the other thing I wanted to say. You said this is very hard to live rooted and grounded. It is hard. And that's why we have to do it together. For example, try to keep the Sabbath. It's impossible. It's almost impossible to do that in this society if you do it on your own. There's birthday parties, there's soccer matches, there's meetings. The church creates all kinds of things. So we have to kind of hold hands with each other and say, and do experiments. Like, okay, let's all try. If you could announce this at the church for Lent, saying every Sunday, let's turn off all of our electronics from noon until 8 o'clock at night. We're just going to try this. It's just an experiment. No phones, no television, no computer, 8 hours for this Sunday. And so everybody says, okay, we're all going to try it. And then the next Sunday, you get together and say, what was that like? And some people will say, oh, I forgot. Other people will say, well, we did it okay until 6, and then my game was on, so we ended up watching that, or I wanted to make this one phone call. And we all kind of help each other break free. It's a jailbreak, you know, and you have to kind of help each other to get out of this kind of mentality that we're stuck in. Yeah.
When you have youth that are functioning on the love side, and give that example of adults that you said before, no friends, no passion, stressed. And you have adults that live in the anxiety side that are their parents. I want to come to youth group next week. No, you can't go. I paid for you to join soccer. That's where you're going.
Yes.
Some thoughts on how to deal with that.
Well, I get asked a lot to go into churches, and they ask me, like, well, why aren't our kids coming to church? You know, well, because young people are watching the direction of your hearts. And so they know when we're feeding them a line. Like, you should go to church and believe in Jesus, but they notice when the adults don't really believe this stuff. You know, they hear when Jesus says, go help the poor. They watch the rhythms of Jesus, but they see that their parents really want them to be very successful, you know, and don't be poor and don't go help others. And, you know, you got things to do like soccer. So part of what needs to happen is for us to notice this. I'll tell you, we have a national example right now. You know, President Obama sends his kids to Sidwell Friends School. It's a Quaker school. It's a school committed to nonviolence. And if you go to their website, you'll see language about teaching creative ways of getting out of conflict and how to handle things in a nonviolent way. Well, you know, here we are in three wars. And so here Obama is having his kids formed in a Quaker school that teaches nonviolence and an Anabaptist tradition, and yet their father is engaged in this